Good morning. My name is Yanita Zlatova, and I don't have any relationships to disclose. I have the privilege to wrap up this discussion and kind of give you the overall picture of the challenges, pitfalls, and successes we had in using electronic health records to measure the population outcomes of and clinical process and care coordination in primary care. And our goal for health information technology and care coordination was to increase the quality of care coordination through health information technology. The key objectives we had were to design HIT tools to support care coordination and to rely on electronic health records for data to measure care coordination. Another objective was to learn how to achieve better care coordination by utilizing EHR data and HIT tools. Using the EHRs to measure clinical processes in care coordination, build population health outcomes of care coordination into the electronic health records, and of course to promote the adoption of the developed HIT tools, which you heard wasn't that challenging, but still with some issues. Who are the stakeholders in this process? The stakeholders are the nurses, the clinical teams, the business intelligence, developing the tools and working directly with the data, the quality improvement team, using the data to improve quality, research and evaluation. In our department, research always uses data that is EHR data, and we work closely with the business intelligence, leadership, of course, and everything is centered around the patients. So why do we need care coordination measurement? Why is care coordination measurement important? Care coordination measures help us quantify care coordination, and we know that quantifying care coordination actually helps to evaluate the services we deliver to our patients. It helps us to answer specific population outcome questions, and at the end to provide better care coordination to our patients. And we know that actually measuring care coordination is quite difficult. For measuring care coordination, we need data. And the definition of electronic health record fields and what kind of information they record should be predetermined based on a data model. Why the data model is so valuable? Because it provides a set of rules to define the structure of the data. It defines the relationships among different kinds of data and also helps with the data planning and identifying the data elements within the electronic health record that are available to use for care coordination measures. And we talked already about the importance of structured data. It's easy to retrieve it. It's easy to generate reports. So what's the current state of using electronic health records data for care coordination? Electronic health records initially were designed really to document care of individual patients for billing insurers for reimbursement of services and not for measuring population data or clinical processes. So it's really underutilized, there are multiple barriers for this to happen. Clinical workflow barriers, lack of data standardization, limited or lack of health EHR systems, interoperability. And you heard already, we talked about the tools we developed, the care coordination dashboard, the transition template, and the nursing scorecard. And you heard already about the plant care dashboard from Mary. So why do we need these tools? We need them to increase adherence to standards of care. And using those tools actually helps change the clinicians' behaviors. The nurses asked for the template, for the transition template, and they needed the checklist. And after implementing the template, their behavior has changed. They knew what to do, and they were covering all the domains they needed to cover. The input data that the nurses use to evaluate what needs to happen is really important, and what's in the scorecards, what's in the dashboard, what's in the template is really what triggers the nurses to do and prompts them to take action steps to help their patients. I think that one of the biggest successes first in this care coordination initiative was to identify who the patients are in need of care coordination. And identifying the high-risk patients, you might think it's easy, but based on our experience, it's quite difficult to go through the literature, see what high-risk patients need, and then how do you define the high-risk patients? And you saw already in the nursing dashboard that we used an algorithm of standardized definitions to identify the high-risk patients who would benefit from care coordination. This nursing dashboard serves as an actionable care opportunity report to the nurses. And at the end, at the population level, patients receive the care that they need. Another success is the tracking of these patients. And we pinged the patients. We used a global alert to track patients enrolled in care coordination. And this allowed us to view from more population-based view the care coordination processes and outcomes. It also allowed us to have more complete and more timely access to population health trends, and Mary showed you some of those, and analytics based on the rich care coordination data set. It actually helps reduce variations in care for the patients. The global alert actually minimizes the data collection burden, and because it's a structured data, it's easy to extract for the care coordination measurement. Another tool we developed, the scorecard, the nursing scorecard that indicates performance on selected care coordination measures for primary care nurses and providers. And you heard from Mary, the performance feedback needs to be credible, timely. What is important is that there is a responsible party clearly identified, and it's based on current clinical data. We are thinking about having this as a flexible query function for drilling down into a measure on the scorecard, and the data is also available for benchmarking. So what are some of the challenges of using existing electronic health record fields? They may not suit a data model for measuring care coordination, and some of the fields might be redundant or use different wording to measure the same thing. Sometimes there are limitations in linking the data. We know that altering fields has consequences for how related fields are populated and accessed. And if you do this, you may interrupt data collection already underway. And for building new fields, you actually need to retrain the clinicians. So in conclusion, clear and standardized standardized definitions of the structured fields in DHR from which population data is mined are very important. Ease in consistency of use of these fields by individual clinicians is also important, because if they don't use the fields consistently, you won't get the data you need. And it is critical that structured data meet a standard of quality if they're to be meaningful for internal and external use, such as for care coordination. And at the end, it takes a really multidisciplinary team of clinicians and experts in quality improvement research and business intelligence to restructure an electronic health record to measure care coordination in primary care. So thank you. And with this, I want to open for questions and discussion with the members of the team. And if you have specific questions, maybe Nick can answer them as well. Nick, thank you.
Depending on exactly, for example, you saw in the scorecard, you have the how many electronic encounters the nurse has in the past 10 years. It's one measure. So depending, it can be a process measure, it can be an outcome measure, for example, control, uncontrol. So you can connect the peer coordination activities and link them within an individuation process with the patient outcome. And then multiple variables that you can track based on the data. And what is very important is the data that is there. And where we didn't have data, we created the template, how to have or the global alerts, the presentation.
In CQA, that has had several, I mean, we're talking a national level now, so looking through standardization, has actually gone through several evolutions, if you will, of trying to standardize some outcome data, and well, some process data too. And so there are, if you go to the NCQA, they have been making some recommendations. Now, what's interesting about that is how many of them are physician-centric. And some of them are very global, like was the patient contacted within 72 hours of discharge, yes or no? You know, what was the, what percent of your panel has managed diabetes within the UDS, you know, meeting UDS measures, et cetera. So if you're looking for something at a national level, we did look at those, and some of those apply to us, and some of those, either we couldn't get that data, or they somehow didn't seem to really apply. And again, a lot of them were very physician-centric, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, it's just that that's just one perspective on care coordination. When really this has been a nursing function for so long. So I think if you're looking for that kind of resource, you can look there. There's actually been a lot of work that's been done. And people say, as Yanita said, man, this is hard to measure. Because a lot of this does come down to process. Ultimately, it's the patient who's going to take the medications or not. It's the patient who's going to follow through with picking up their meds. It's the patient who's, so what are we doing?
Yeah, I think the main focus is to really sort of look at kind of the job description in the program in terms of nursing. So any sort of the core functions, we do structure. So for example, self-management goal. So now every single time a nurse creates a self-management goal, was the patient ready to set a self-management goal, yes or no? What is their level of confidence? If they weren't yet ready to set a self-management goal, how do you structure the fact that motivational interviewing takes place? or if you're following up on a self-management goal, how do you structure progress towards the goal? Because what I'm looking at is those operational measures of the number of nursing contacts. So if I look at all of your outcome measures as a diabetic, and I say I now track your A1C from 9 to 7, or now you're up to date on all your planned care measures, I can say, you know, the nurse had 7 contacts with that patient, 3 telephone encounters, 2 visits, and whatever. And they were in care management for a period of 2 months. And see, is there any correlation between those activities or the number of contacts or the amount of self-management goals or the motivational interviewing? Did it ever result in a self-management goal? So you can begin to sort of really flesh out what it looks like over time. But again, these are not, it's not the same as you're a diabetic and I'm starting a medication, so 3 months later there will be a distinct significant change in your A1C, because again, we're focusing on you know, modifications that really take sometimes a lot longer to really be implemented for patients and to really get their buy-in in terms of self-management. Our patients don't exist in a culture of self-management. You know, they oftentimes don't understand you know, the connection between how they feel every day and their chronic disease, and that's really the task that we're tackling in care management.
And I think there's always that challenge between, are you, you can ask people to over-document. I mean, at what point are you asking so much documentation that you're driving the staff crazy, but at what point do you have enough documentation that you can capture that this is what's happening and that you can make some connection between what's happening and an ultimate outcome? It's still, I mean, it's great.
There is no specific measure for sort of patient interaction with their team, but in the context of the telephone encounter, each time that nurse outreaches to a specialist or we get a consult noted, that's all structured data. So whenever we receive any sort of written notification or written conversation, there is some discussion of engaging. I'm sure you've probably heard of like P2P networks. In being able to have conversation back and forth electronically in the record. So there is some discussion of looking at that, but again, every time the nurse sort of outreaches or there is that sort of conversation on the team, that's captured within the context of the cell phone encounter at this point.
So question.
Well,
I wanted to just add a comment. You know, some of what you're discussing
Yeah, I think the best way that I feel like we've tackled it, and we didn't get an opportunity to talk about it this morning, so kind of the phase two of our project is actually through a HRSA-funded grant where we actually get 3 years to continue to follow care management. One of the best innovations that's really involved in that is the creation of complex care management project ECHO. And a lot of that is sort of the translation of that supervision model, where I, as the chief nursing officer, Kathleen as our lead researcher, have that continued conversation with nurses about what they're actually doing with patients. And as that translates to a Project Echo model, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Project Echo, but it's a telehealth model of knowledge exchange. So we have an interdisciplinary faculty team with a PharmD, a behavioral health provider, a medical provider, a self-management goal and motivational interviewing nurse specialist, myself kind of coming from the data side of things to really make sure that we're documenting things properly. I'm missing a registered dietitian, you know, a few other team members. And those nurses actually meet for two days a month for 2 hours, where they actually have to submit cases and they present their cases. They receive didactic, short, maybe 20-minute didactic, and then they submit cases. And we have an ongoing discussion. So we get to hear their thought process, hear the ways that they intervene, review the entire record to see, yes, we are measuring a telephone encounter, but now I have the opportunity to review the content of that telephone encounter. And does it really include a description of what your motivational interviewing was and what the specific goal was? And was it a good goal that you set or was it unreachable? So are we continuing to make those connections with patients? And so, this project will continue ongoing. The nurses all get blocked to come to this Project Echo, so they get the opportunity and they're all expected to present cases. And I think that's really where we capture, so that I get an idea as a chief nursing officer, who is really engaging me in this project and who really isn't. And how do I then intervene on a one-on-one basis to really make sure that I'm supporting them and giving them what they need.
I think there's always going to be tension between population level data and clinical data. Like for the UDS measures, for example, blood pressure, you know, high blood pressure is 140 over 90. So if you have a patient who has a blood pressure of 150 over 90, but you can't bring that patient down because otherwise they're going to fall over. But they are well maintained at 150 over 90 and have been for a long time, they fall into your category of uncontrolled blood pressure. Even though that pain, and the same thing happens with diabetes, patients whose A1C, but they're maintained and they're doing well at that higher level, but they're going to fall into your population of uncontrolled. And so that's all the tension.
Well, I think that's where specific data will come in. Again, you know, we look at population measures, but the reality is where we need to really head is how do primary care providers set individual patient goals in collaboration with the specialist to say, you know what, this elderly brittle diabetic really can't have an A1C below 8 because they could die of hypoglycemia.
Right.
So for them, their goal is 8. And so how do we then in the data capture them as control because their patient goal is 8?
Right.
And I think the main way that we're really going to do that is just continuing to engage conversations with vendors, you know, working with our BI folks to say that this is where we need to get to. How do we get there and make it as click neutral as possible for our teams?
Click neutral.
Have you done anything with quality of care measures? Either quality of care of patients, quality of life measures?
Quality of life measures in particular?
There is some ongoing work using patient-reported data, as well as with the new care management grant. You know, we'll be doing a lot of patient data collection in terms of CAPS PCMH and some of the other data collection. So again, that stuff is going to be ongoing. But the other thing too is, right, for the patient experience, we're always capturing it as sort of that their experience with their provider. And so as an FQHC who believes in team-based care and really promotes the full primary care team caring for the patient, how do we really capture the patient's perception of their encounter with their team? And do they really absorb the fact that their team is heavily invested in not just the measure for that one visit, but I perceive a relationship and I perceive that my level of functioning has improved over time, and I'm perceiving that the different things that the different interventions are really making an impact.
So is that going into your EHR, or that's a separate measure?
So it's also incorporated in the EHR as structured data. And it's linked with self-management goals as well. Actually, if you want to talk more about it, we have one of our folks up front, Christian Crashen, who's working specifically on that project.
Thank you.
And if you want any of our slides, you can give us your email. I'm not sure how, are they supposed to be accessible afterwards? But if not, if you want to just give us your email.
Again, about your question, we also developed a peer coordination survey for our patients. And in that survey, the questions are actually asked not by the provider, but the team. And the patients are being asked how they perceive their peer coordination that would be verified by the team, not just the provider.
I'm sorry,
but what's the frequency of interaction between care coordinators and the patient? Is it like a weekly phone call? Or, I mean, what is?
It's really patient specific. So depending upon what they're working on with that patient. So, you know, I might have a patient enrolled because they have COPD and diabetes, but right now the only thing they want to focus on is smoking cessation. So then I might see them every 2 weeks for smoking cessation in hope that I'll engage them further in, let's make a bone sheet for your COPD, let's, you know, talk about some standing medication orders that you may need to keep you out of the hospital, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really set by the nurses. But I think, again, in the dashboard, being able to see sort of the, you know, I as a chief nursing officer can go in and see, so how old are those self-management goals? Are they following up? Are they keeping them current? So again, you have those performance measures over time, so there is some accountability. And in our electronic health record, we're able to sort of track action items too, so they can set patient-specific sort of tickler reminders. So that, you know, maybe I want to see the patient in 4 weeks this time, or 2 weeks, or 1 week, I can set a patient-specific message to show up in my bin to say, now is the time I need to go contact this patient. So that's really helpful.
Can you say a little bit more about the role of the providers in either the development process or the implementation, you know, the champions, or anything, push that down?
So the good news is as a chief nursing officer, I definitely partner very heavily with the CMO. We, like, you know, our offices are right next to each other and we pretty much spend all our time together. So in the rollout of this program, it was really important that we went site by site and actually spent time with the PCPs. I think it's a lot of how we communicate it. So it's not an I'm asking permission to, but I'm letting you know that this is coming and we need your support. You know, a lot of the providers, I think, of course, were like, well, how is this going to impact me? Like, what am I going to need to do that's differently? So it was important that we were proactive in our conversation about this. And so the providers know that, you know, their nurses are care managing patients. They can refer patients into care management if they see a patient and they have a particular concern that they want a nurse to work on. But the nurse also proactively enrolls patients as well. So there's that ongoing conversation, as well as we're about to kick off with the new HRSA grant, 40 minutes of dedicated time every other week where the provider and the nurse actually meet together to do sort of panel management related to their care management panel. So that will be an opportunity where the nurse can say, hey, you know, I created a zone sheet for Mr. So-and-so, I need you to sign off on the medication orders or whatever. But the nurses are very proactive to get the delegated orders from the providers. You know, if they're going to, you know, let's say they see a patient for a routine diabetic visit and they, you know, they do sort of a needs assessment to identify, you know, there's three areas I need to work on with this patient. They'll send a telephone message to their provider to say, hey, I'm going to meet with Mr. So-and-so for, you know, these visits for the next few weeks, and this is what we're going to be working on. And the provider just agrees to it, thereby sort of ordering those delegated visits. So it's definitely an ongoing conversation, but to your point, it's proactive. They are a team member. The nurse might be the care manager, but everybody else is involved. Even the medical assistants. You know, I don't expect that my nurses are going to do the faxing and the scanning and the planned care and all the other things for their care management patients, because that really lives with the activated role of the medical assistants. So.
Somebody else
was up
there, somebody back there first, yeah, and then you can.
Hi, I'm a project coordinator for this project in New York State, and I was present from, as you know, the coordinator for the topic. I was just curious if you ever considered giving tying this to an incentive, and if it happened, how would you recommend that to make it successful and sustainable for this to be successful?
So there are the main incentive really is, you know, in Connecticut we do actually get compensated for nursing visits, so independent nursing visits we do get reimbursed for them because our nurses are considered LIPs or licensed independent providers. So there is sort of a productivity bonus where nurses and medical assistants actually are part of the provider incentive. But other than that, we really haven't delved too much into incentives other than in our smoking cessation programs and rewards to quit dealing with incentivizing patients to get them to quit smoking. So I think we're sort of dipping our toes in the waters of incentives and trying to decide sort of how we feel about it.
So we pulled all our data from the clinical work, which is our electronic health record, and then we also get the data feed from our Medicaid, which helps us measure, you know, how many hospital transitions that takes place. Hopefully it comes straight from our electronic health record. So Connecticut, it's very difficult to get that, those claims. We get decent claims feed from Medicaid, but the other payers, they really don't get much at all. Medicaid doesn't have health information exchange yet. So that's been a big challenge, is actually being able to collect that claims data. So yeah, most of it we have to rely on the electronic health record and what we get from Medicaid. Yes.
So what do you think would be the advantage?
With the electronic health record data, we have all the measures of all the vital signs and all the actual lab results that you wouldn't get from the claims data. So that's most of the advantage of the electronic health record data. So we update our data warehouse every night with all the visits that have been that day. So every 24 hours update. It's pretty close to real time, yeah.
I think last is, so the advantage also is that, you know, when it comes to the transition data, of course, if we're only getting a claim to be for Medicaid, then all of our other payers are uninsured patients, and even some of our Medicaid patients that aren't attributed to us, because of course every, you know, insurance payer has an attribution process. So if those patients aren't attributed to us, again, we're not going to get those claims. So, you know, we have to be able to measure the transition elsewhere. And the way that we do that is, again, it's clunky, but it's those old discharge summaries that they get scanned into our records. So again, that helps us to really sort of capture the universe of transition, so to speak. Claims data, though, I think is really challenging as we've also partnered with CHM looking at our diabetes data and other measures. Sometimes, for example, if you do point of care A1C, you know, if the billing isn't captured properly or if all the codes don't go over, you know, like their rate of our hemoglobin A1C measurement in the course of a year, getting two measures a year, was really low. And when they actually came and looked at our data, there was a mismatch, and a lot of it was because the claims weren't accurate. So again, you know, claims will capture, you know, like the purpose of the visit, so this is a transition, but some of the weight testing and the other things that are done right at the point of care often get lost because only a certain number of codes actually go over. So claims is kind of in a position when it comes to some of the patient outcome data.
Yeah, I would agree with Mary. We are already next for this. We use the same data for coordination measurement purposes, and depending where you want to go, claims look into cost effectiveness of the coordination, then you are much better off with the
Well, we know it's 10 o'clock. Thank you so much. Hey, you can, you know, come after.